This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, so Parshas Vayakhel. Three ideas to share with you this evening. If you look at the handout, if you're listening online, please email me, j.golker@gmail.com. I'll send you the handout. Three very interesting ideas in this week's Parsha. The Parsha, let's start with the opening Pasuk. Vayakhel Moshe es kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Of course, normally Vayakhel b'kudde goes together. It's a double Parsha, but this week, this year, because it's a leap year, the Parshas are separate, so it's just Vayakhel this week. Vayakhel Moshe es kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu gathers the whole of the Jewish people, Vayema aleihem, ein lehadrom ashet tziva Hashem lasa usoso. Now, there is an interesting kliyok. I saw this in the writings of Rabbi Yaakov Bender. I think I mentioned him last week as well. He says something very, very interesting. He quotes a kliyok. Says the kliyok. Let's do it inside. It's very beautiful. Vayakhel Moshe es kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Pirush Rashi. When did this take place? The beginning of this week's parasha. When did Moshe Rabbeinu gather the whole of the Jewish people? The Machros Yom HaKippurim. It was on the day after Yom Kippur. Now let me give you just a little bit of Jewish history, a bit of a timeline. We know, of course, Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim on Pesach, the 15th of Nisan. Fast forward 7 weeks, Matan Torah, Shavuos, the Sphira. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Har Sinai, he gives the Luchos, Aseres HaDibros. He then begins the first lot of 40 days, which takes us to Shivos of the Tammuz. He comes down the mountain, the terrible site of Egel HaZov, last week's parasha. He breaks the Luchos, he comes down, he deals with it, punishes those who are caught up with it. And then he goes up again for a second set of 40 days to plead on the behalf of Klal Yisrael to be forgiven. And then that takes us to Rosh Chodesh Elul. From Rosh Chodesh Elul until Yom Kippur is the third lot of 40 days where Moshe Rabbeinu gets the Luchos Shnius. He comes down on Yom Kippur, Solachti, HaKadosh Baruch was forgiven for the chet of the Egel. And then, Vayhi Mimachros, it was on the day after Yom Kippur, that's when this parasha begins. So it's straight after the 120 days, the three lots of 40 days, Moshe Rabbeinu was up on Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, he gathers the people, and he tells them about the Mishkan. We're going to start collecting for Mishkan, which we're going to start building. And the dedication, of course, the inauguration of the Mishkan will happen on Rosh Chodesh Nisan 6 months later. Now, says the Kli Yakor, V'atzad ha-remez nema, she-hakel ze-choye le-tavei chashon b'neihem. The purpose of this hakel, of bringing the whole Jewish people together on the day after Yom Kippur, was to instill shalom, peace, within the Jewish people. Ki ein adam darim nachash b'kfifa achas, come on, Yevamos, which means a person cannot live with a snake in a basket. In other words, if there's animosity in a home, it's very hard to live together in that home. And that's true with the people, with the nation, with the people as well. Once he wanted to teach Klal Yisrael about the Mishkan, we're going to build this beautiful home for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like it's a home for all of us. We're all going to be a partner. We're going to be one big partnership in this enterprise. It's as if we're all residing in the same house. There needs to be shalom. There needs to be a unity before we can embark on this enterprise. Balkim, next paragraph, Pirush Rashi says the Kli Yakor. Rashi explained, Shehoyazel and Machros Yom HaKippurim. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu specifically waited until after Yom Kippur. Lefishe kol hachaniyos hoyu b'machlokos v'tarumus. All the encampments until now were b'machlokos and with arguments and complaints. Chutz v'nachaniyos shekredi matan Torah. Apart, of course, from the camping immediately before Matan Torah, where it says Vayichan Sham Yisrael, v'imkein eich efshel akilim bizman sheim mechulakim. How could Moshe Rabbeinu gather them together at a time when there's division in the camp? Ve'ein daitim shavim, ve'ein zezman muchan. It's not the right time. Lazem motzam Moshe akilim b'kiritzolim l'morchas Yom Kippur. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu gathered them dafka after Yom Kippur, ki b'Yom Kippur hashalom tuvuch ve'nehem, because after Yom Kippur, all the people feel the shalom, the achdus, the feeling of purity and of togetherness. And on that day, they were all feeling the achdus, the day after Yom Kippur, we all know what it's like. We're all in a high still from Yom Kippur. We're feeling feelings of friendship and of warmth and of love towards each other. But if you wait another day or two, then that feeling sometimes dissipates. Everyone's gone off to his own way, and the rope has unraveled. But Kadesh lo yisnaged, last paragraph, but Kadesh lo yisnaged Hashalom divrei ribois, and therefore to make sure there's not going to be any upset to this shalom, what happens? Shebeneim be'esek moment shebein ish lechaver, there shouldn't be any financial disputes. Ki ein l'shalom shleim kippur esek was there, because the shalom of Yom Kippur has no impact on financial complaints against each other. Al kein yoshel Moshe gam mishpoi betzem hayom kadesh shem kol tzad yeshon beneim, there'll be financial harmony, there'll be general harmony, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu chose the day after Yom Kippur. V'oz yu roi nedor b'modo echod d'haino ha-mishkan ha-mishut v'kula. Beautiful. In other words, says the Kli Yakar, Moshe Rabbeinu wants to embark on the mission, the enterprise of the Mishkan. To do so, there needs to be shalom. You can't live in a basket with a snake. You can't live in one abode if there's machlokas. So Moshe Rabbeinu gathers all the people. There's a feeling of shalom. It's the day after Yom Kippur. Everyone's forgiven each other. And even financial matters, Moshe Rabbeinu judges the people to make sure to iron out any issues financially between the people. We know, for example, on Kol Nidre, we go to shul and we say the Tefillah Zakah. And of course, there's the famous paragraph that the Chofetz Chaim asked to be added in, that we're moichel each other. But there it says, chutz, apart from any money which someone owes me, I'm not necessarily moichel that. You know, if someone owes me £1,000, then why should I just forgive him? I can choose to, but I can still forgive for other things that people may have done, but I still want to, you know, hold on to that din Torah. So then Moshe Rabbeinu would judge the people the next day to sort of iron out even those financial disputes. Good. Now, with that kiyokar, we can explain an archaim in the beginning of Sefer Shemos. The Sefer Shemos, we're now at the very end, Vayakel, towards the very end of Sefer Shemos. But if we go back to Perek Aleph of Shemos, Posuk Ches, we're introduced to the whole beginning of the Shibbut. Vayakom melech chodosh on Mitzrayim asher lo yoda es Yosef. Famous pasuk. A new king was arose in Mitzrayim who didn't know Yosef. Rashi famously says either it was literally mamish, a melech chodosh mamish, or he chose not to know Yosef. Vayomer el amo hinei am bnei Yisrael rav v'otz nimenu. The Jewish people, they're multiplying quickly. We've got a problem on our hands. That's the famous Psukim in Shemais. The question asked the Arachayim is, what were Mitzrayim so worried about? Why were the Egyptians so intimidated by this relatively small slave nation? What was the problem? They were the superpower of the day. Not a single slave had ever left Egypt. What was the problem? Says the Arachayim, Ki am ze meshun mikol ha'amim. Yes, they were still quite relatively small, was relative to other nations, but they are considered huge compared to other nations, because the nature of the Jewish people, when there is achdus amongst us, that there is everyone looks out for the other one, everyone helps his friends. And this concept is known to military strategists, to those who are involved in planning of war. What does that mean? I'll tell you, I'll explain it by way of an anecdote that Rabbi Benza mentions, a famous anecdote regarding Reb Chaim Volozhin and Napoleon. I think it brings out the point very well. Napoleon, the great emperor, once he wanted to wage war against Russia. So he first went to get advice from Reb Chaim Volozhin. Reb Chaim Volozhin, the famous Talmud of the Gaon, the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva, which is the mother of all yeshivas of today. He went to Reb Chaim Volozhin and he asked him, should he wage war? So Reb Chaim Volozhin gave him a moshel. He said, imagine you have a nobleman who's riding on his chariot and he's driven by horses. And it's a cold winter day. The roads are poor and icy and slippery, and the horses slip and the carriage falls and it goes over to the side and they get stuck in some icy cold mud. And the wagon driver, the nobleman, is obviously very cross, and he shouts at the driver to get the horses up. And whatever he tries, the driver cannot get the horses to go. They're not cooperating. And they're there hour after hour, they don't know what to do. Until a peasant comes along on his small wagon driven by, you know, two or three very bony horses. And he offers some help. So he says, so they say, yeah, we'd love some help. So these, you know, emaciated, thin, bony horses, he latches them onto the nobleman's carriage, and they schlep together, and they schlep the carriage out of mud, and he gets them on their way. How did that happen? How did that work? So the nobleman went over to the poor wagon driver and said, how did your horses do it? Your horses are so weak and emaciated. My horses are big and strong. So the poor wagon driver explained. He said, your horses, they've come from the finest stables from all over the kingdom. And they're from different stables and different owners. They don't know each other, the horses. Each one is fending for himself. They're very strong and very big and very beautiful. But each one is looking out for himself. He says, my horses, they all grew up in the same stable. They've known each other forever. They've eaten together. They've worked the fields together. They're good friends. And therefore, they're working, they're cooperating together. That's why they were able to get your carriage out of the mud. Said Reb Chaim Volozhin to Napoleon, he said, you, Napoleon, you've assembled a strong army, but from all over the kingdom. You've got military strategists who are helping you, but there's no brotherhood amongst them. The Russians, they may not be as well trained and well armed as your army, but they're a family. They eat together, they drink together, they sing together, they look out for each other. And therefore, I suggest you back off. Almost prophetic words from Reb Chaim Volozhin to Napoleon. And that's really what's going on over here. Says the Reb Chaim, the reason why Mitzrayim was so worried about Klal Yisrael, because they displayed an achdus. They displayed, even though they were a small number, they were one family. They looked out for each other. And therefore, relative to other nations, they were way bigger and more powerful. That's what the Reb Chaim said at the beginning of the parasha. And that's really what's going on at the beginning of this week's parasha, Parshas Vayakel. Because Moshe Rabbeinu waits until the point when Klal Yisrael again displayed that achdus, that now I can gather you together and we can embark on the building of the Mishkan, because without the achdus, it's impossible to reside in this Mishkan together. The mission, the project will not be successful, and the ultimate aim of living together in one abode in the Mishkan itself will not be possible without the achdus that we're trying to achieve. Okay. A very beautiful idea. Let's move on. The next idea I saw in an email that I looked up, I got from my friend, he says a very, very beautiful idea. The parasha begins, the parasha says, if you look at in paragraph 2, by Yomer Moshe Lemar, Marbim Ham Lahavi. Everyone's bringing and donating for the Mishkan until Midei Ha'avodin Locha Shet Tziv Hashem Lasos. They've got more than they need. By Tzav Moshe Vavir Kol Machane Lemar Ish Ve'ish Al Yasu Oid Locha L'Trumas HaKodesh. By Kolei Ha'om Mehavi. We've got more than enough. People should stop bringing. We've got plenty. Thank you very much. Appeal closed. Now, think about that for a moment. Imagine you've got a fundraising campaign, right? I know that in school we've got one on Sunday and Monday, so it's the talk of the moment. So you've got a fundraising campaign, and you've got a certain hope to raise a certain amount of money. Let's say the campaign runs until whatever time it is, 10 o'clock on Monday night. Then you want to raise £2 million. Imagine by 7 o'clock on Monday evening, you hit your target. You've got £2 million. Is anyone going to sort of press the red button and say, okay, stop now? We've got more than enough. In the next 3 hours, you could still get a few £100,000. Who on earth would want to stop the campaign when you've still got some time to go? But that's what exactly happens in this week's parasha. Moshe Rabbeinu says, why? Why doesn't Moshe Rabbeinu want to have, to collect a little bit more than is necessary, would have a reserve fund? And moreover, why didn't Moshe want to collect spare parts for the Mishkan? I mean, think about it. A lot of the kalim in the Mishkan, aside from the bigger kalim, but there were so many other smaller kalim, why don't you have spares, duplicates, triplicates? And to exacerbate, to compound the question, the Sefarno says that that's indeed what happened in Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. Take a look at the Sefarno, the next box in paragraph 2. There was more than necessary there. They accumulated more money and more gold and silver, etc., than there was needed. And therefore, Shanos mid of a kotzav lemishkan lecholkel, because we had a specific amount that we needed, and they collected enough. Aleihem ein lahosef umehem ein nigra. Don't collect any more, no more, no less. We've got exactly what we need. Loike inyan binyan shleima v'hurdos. Now, it was not true with the binyan of Shlomo HaMelech, because he accepted more than was necessary. And Hurdus as well, in Bayis Sheni, he collected more than was actually needed because he wanted to accumulate extra funds. So the question is, why? What is this foreigner needs an explanation? Why is the Mishkan different? Why didn't they keep a reserve fund, and why didn't they make spares of the Kalim and the Mishkan? Indeed, the Mishnah in Chagiga, the bottom box says, it's the last Mishnah in Chagiga, Perek Gimel Mishnah Ches, Kol HaKelim Shehoyu B'Migdash, Yesh Lohem Shniyim V'Shlishim. There were spares, there were duplicates and triplicates in the Mishkan. So the question is, the Sepharim needs an explanation, why didn't they continue the campaign for the Mishkan? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu tell them to stop? And second of all, why were there any spare parts in the Mishkan? So I see the answer is found in the Das Sakenim Ibali HaTosfos in Parshas Truma. Now, the Das Sakenim asked the following question. If you take a look at the top of the next page, he's talking about the Orin. Now, we know the Orin was made up of three boxes. You've got the big gold box, inside it was a wooden box, and inside that was another gold box. So the question is, this is the Orin HaKodesh. This is going to house the Luchos. Why isn't it made of pure gold? Who needs the wood in the middle? Says the Das Kenim Ibali HaTosfos. Royu Hoy Ha'orin Yozov Kulei. Really? The whole orange should have been made out of gold. But if it was made out of gold, pure gold, it's going to be incredibly heavy. And therefore, someone has got to schlep it. Even though we know, Chazal tell us, that the orange was noiseyas noisov, which means it carried those who carried it, it miraculously sort of hovered over the shoulders of the people carrying it. That was lefishah. That wasn't always. There were times in Jewish history where they actually had to carry it on their shoulders properly. So too with the Mizbeach HaZohov. Why? Why wasn't it made out of pure gold? Because otherwise it's going to be too heavy to carry. So therefore, says Rabbi Friend, very beautiful answer. What you see from this Das Sakenim is we're worried, we're considerate for those people who are schlepping, who are taking the Kalim and the Mishkan. It's all well and good in the Beis HaMikdash, you can keep the spare parts in a certain room, in the Bais Rishon, Bais Sheni, but in the Mishkan, they're traveling around for 40 years. If you're going to keep the campaign going, who's going to schlep the extra sacks of money? Who's going to schlep the duplicates and the triplicates of all the Kalim and the Mishkan? You can't be frum on somebody else's cheshbon. You can't suddenly just have lots of reserves just in case. Someone's got to schlep that. You know, they tell the famous story of Bistro Salanta. The Bistro Salanta one time was a guest in somebody's home and they sat down for a meal. And the Bistro Salanta went to wash. And when he washed, until it's a dime, we know the halacha is you should really wash until your wrist. Both hands, you wash until your wrist. But the Bistro Salanta relied upon a lenient opinion and only washed until his knuckles. So he was questioned, why aren't you washing to the wrist? The Chatchila one should try and do that. So Bistro Salanta explained that this person has employed a poor young girl to go down to the well to schlep the water back, someone who works in the house. So I should be frum on her cheshbon. I should try and, you know, wash my hands in the most ideal way and use more water. So she's got to go down more times to the well and carry more buckets of the water back up. And therefore, says the Bistro Salanta, I would prefer to rely on the lenient opinion and wash only to my knuckles so that I don't impose my chumras and my stringencies on other people. Bistro Salanta famously also was when his older years, he was unable to go to the matzah bakery himself to bake the matzahs. So his talmidim asked him, we're going to go bake matzahs. Rebbe will bake for you, but tell us, what are your chumras? What are your chumras that you take on, you're particular about when it comes to baking matzahs? So Bistro Salanta told them, he said, my chumra is this. There's a certain almon, there's a certain lady who cleans up between each round of baking, she cleans the matzah bakery. Now, for those who've been to matzah bakeries, it's a very stressful environment. You've got the big clock, 18 minutes clicking down. It's quite an intense environment. And sometimes people get a little bit heated, and maybe you could say a crossword, an angry word at this lady. My chumra is, don't. Be gentle, be kind, be pleasant to her. That's my chumra when it comes to matzah baking. And that's really what this whole point, this Sephora is saying. The answer to our question is, why didn't they continue the campaign? Why didn't they make reserve funds? Why didn't they make spares, duplicates, triplicates of all the kelim in the Mishkan? The answer is because that's being firm on somebody else's cheshbon. Because somebody's got to schlep that, somebody's got to carry that. And therefore, I can't impose my chumras at the expense of another person. Very interesting and very important lesson. Okay, third and final offering of this evening. This is something I once mentioned in a parasha shir of previous years, I forget when, but I want to add something I saw in the Mishchas Shemen. Let me just quickly review what I said previously. The pasuk says in Vayakel, women with special chachma, they were able to spin the hair on the goat whilst it was still attached to the animal. A special chachma, Rashi says, whilst the fleece was still on the, before they sheared off the wool from the animal, they were able to spin the hair on the back of the animal. They only sheared it off afterwards. Why did they do that? What was the need? So different explanations. I think in a previous year, I mentioned the Sefarno and the Meshech Chochma. The Sefarno simply says, because it would generate more pristine wool. Because the more the wool is handled by people, the more it loses its luster. And therefore, if it was spun whilst on the back of the animal, and then it was only then, and after that, it was sort of, you know, like a braid hair, and then you take it, and then you cut it off, then it would retain its sort of freshness and pristine condition. The Meshech Chochma gives a different reason. He gives a fascinating reason, which I mentioned previously, that it would enable spinning the hair on the back of the goat would enable all the women to partake. Why? Because some of the women would have been nidois, would have been a woman who was a nida, would not be able to do it because it would be metame the wool. But we know there a rule is, bali chaim in a mekablim tumah. Animals, live animals, are not mekabel tumah, and therefore, even if a nida were to touch the animal, it wouldn't become tumah. And therefore, in order to allow all the women to participate, they dafka spun the hair on the goat on the back of the animal whilst it was still attached. Therefore, all the women could do it, it would not become tame, and they could all participate. Interestingly, says the Meshech Chochma, that's why when it came to the Tcheles, which is Mekabel Truma, it says, the Pasuk says, V'loshen Yochid, what's the Loshen? V'chol HaNoshen Tovu Es'izim, with us, it's Tovu, and with a Tcheles, it says in the Loshen Yochid. Why? Because with the Tcheles, it was Rak HaTahiris, it was only those ladies who were not in Nida, could they do it. That's why it says B'loshen Yochid. But when it came to this, when it comes to the Tovu Es'izim, it says it B'loshen Rabim, because everyone could participate. Okay, that's the Meshech Chochma. What I want to add this year is an interesting insight from the Mishchas Shemen. The Mishchas Shemen is from Chaim Shaul Kaufman Zatzal. He was one of the Rosh Shivas in Tiferet Yaakov in Gateshead. A very big Talmud Chochma, a very charismatic person. And he's got beautiful Sfarim in Mishchas Shemen, where there are different Sfarim, where there's tremendous lomdus on the Parsha. But I just want to take a few extracts, a few paragraphs of it. Take a look, please, at the bottom paragraph, paragraph 3c. Parashas Vayakel, Ne'emar, V'chol HaNoshim Asher Nosu Libon Hisonu B'Chochma Tovu Esoizim. Our Pasuk, the women would spin the hair whilst it was still attached to the goat. Pirush Rashi, Yehoisa Ummas Yisera Shmeal Gabi Hoizim. That was the Chochma Yisera, this tremendous wisdom that the women were able to do it. V'hamakar, the Dvar B'Gmur HaShabbos, Rashi gets it from the Gmur HaShabbos, Taf Ayin Dalet Umbeis, V'Seif and Nachlas Yaakov, V'maskel Adovit, Pirush Ratam. They explain the need, why the Torah required them to do it. That the women did, they did this special chachma. To retain the pristine condition of the wool, like the Sfarno says. Now, he asks the kasha. When it comes to Shabbos, we need, for a person to be chayav for a melacha on Shabbos, there's a criteria called Meleches Machsheves, which is a big topic. There isn't time to discuss it fully. But Meleches Machsheves means that it's got to be done with kavana, it's got to be done in the normal way, and lots of conditions where you know you need it for the purpose it was done, the Mishkan, etc., in order to be chayev for this Melech on Shabbos. So says the Chelkas Yoev, given the Tfiyah al Gabi ism, since the spinning of this wool was on the back of the goats, Havikilachayad. So this is done in an abnormal way. It's done in an unusual form, and therefore it's not Meleches Machsheves. If it's not Meleches Machsheves, in Kain Eich Mahani leMeleches HaMishkan, how on earth could this be suitable for use in the Mishkan? One of the, in fact, the whole of Hilchos Shabbos Meleches Machsheves is derived from the Mishkan. So if this is Kilach Hayad, it's done with a shinui, it's done not in the normal way, so how could this be considered Meleches HaMishkan, which needs to be done in the proper way? That's the kasha of the Chelkas Yoev. So the Stipler, the Kehilas Yaakov, is the Mishka Shemin brings this, and he gives a lovely answer. V'Hakehilas Yaakov Kosav, Z'yesh Leimah, D'loi Bo'inen Meleches Machsheves B'Meleches HaMishkan, we only need Meleches Machsheves for the Mishkan, rak b'melachos she'osim acha shehugdashu hachafetzim, only after the items were magdish, were sort of sanctified for use in the Mishkan. Aval tibi ha'izim also koid magdesham, but the spinning of the wool on the goats, on the back of the goats, was done before they were magdish this wool to the Beis HaMikdash. V'nehi d'tzorech lishma v'lehagdish tekev miyad le'tzorech. Beautiful. So it turns out the women would spin the goat's wool on the back of the animals. And then when they're ready to shear the wool off, then they would say, this is, you know, l'shem mitzvahs matzahs, l'shem mitzvahs meleches mishkan. They would do it for the right purpose, and then they would shear it off and ready to go. But the lack of meleches machsheves, the fact that it was done b'shinu when it was still on the back of the animal, is not a problem. And indeed, the Mishcha Shemen continues, this answers another question. Look at the final paragraph on the sheet. B'yismach Moshe Kosov, da'atam she'osu ken anoshim l'tavis gabi'ezim l'choch mi'aseira, k'dei she'yuchu l'asus b'shabbos. Interesting. B'yismach Moshe says, do you know why they did it in this unusual way? Because the women were able to do it on Shabbos as well. Rashi says in this week's Edra, that the meleches, the melochas of the Mishkan are not docha Shabbos. But the women wanted to do something on Shabbos. They wanted to be involved on Shabbos. So they did this on Shabbos. It's Chil Shabbos. The Meleches HaMishkan in the Deicha Shabbos. L'hochi osu k'lach hayad, the Mutter b'Shabbos. They did it with a shinri. They did it in an unusual way when the wool was still on the back of the animal in order that they could do it on Shabbos. Are you going to tell me it's a drabonon? So perhaps Ein Shvus B'Migdash, the drabonons they weren't worried about. Amazing. Aval hadov pele, but asks the Mishcha Shemen, hang on a second. But this itself gives another problem, because in Cain, Eich Mahanim Meleches HaMishkan, how could therefore it be fitting for the Meleches HaMishkan, Kim De'ena Meleches Machsheves? If it was done with a shinui on purpose so that you couldn't do it on Shabbos, so then you're back to square one. Therefore, it would be invalid for the use for the Mishkan. For Kukushas HaChelkas Yaakov, like the Chelkas Yaakov's question. But according to the answer that the stipler, the Kiddush Yaakov, gives, we've resolved our problem. Since this act was done before they were magdashit, they would spin the hair on the back of the animal, and that was allowed to be done on Shabbos, but it's not a problem of not being meleches machsheves, because at that stage, koidem shehegdeshon, lo boin meleches machsheves, only when they're ready to do it, and then they shear it off in the normal way, that was done not on Shabbos, and then that was done in the normal way, which is considered fit for Meleches Machsheves, for Meleches HaMishkan. Very interesting piece on the Mishcha Shemen. It's a longer piece, but that's just some of the main points. So just to summarize what we've spoken about this evening, three ideas. The Parsha begins Vayakel, Moshe's Kladas Bnei Yisrael. He gathers the whole Jewish people when he begins this new enterprise of building the Mishkan. Why at now do we need the gathering of all the Jewish people together? Because we're going to embark on this enterprise which needs Achdus. And therefore he waits, especially till after Yom Kippur, when there's a feeling of shalom, of peace between every single member of the Jewish people. And we need that peace in order to live in this Mishkan together. We can't you can't live in a basket with a snake. There needs to be Avo v'Achva Shalom v'Reis amongst the people living in the one house, the whole of Klal Yisrael, with this Mishkan. And that explains, that's what the Aruch Chaim says, is what Paro was so worried about in Mitzrayim. Even though they were a slave nation up against a superpower, but he saw that Klal Yisrael were working together. They looked out for each other. There was an achdus amongst them. And when there's achdus, anything can be achieved. And that's really what Chaim Volozhin said to Napoleon, that the Russian soldiers, that there is an achdus amongst them. They're like the horses in the marshal of the noblemen who grew up in the same stable. And therefore, they look out for each other and they can sort of punch above their weight. They can achieve more. The second idea we saw is the Sfarno. The Sfarno says that in contrast to Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni, the Mishkan, they got specifically the amount they needed. In Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni, they actually asked and went out for more. And moreover, like the Mishnah Chagiga says, there were duplicates and triplicates of all the Kalim. Why? The answer is because in Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni, you could save and you could keep reserves and it wouldn't bother anybody. But when it came to the Mishkan, somebody's got to schlep them. And therefore, I can't be machmir on somebody else's cheshbon. As per the story of Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, with washing until his knuckles and not his wrists, not to take a chumrah, not to be strict on somebody else's cheshbon, the poor lady who's going to schlep the water, and so too with the matzah bakery. And finally, the spinning of the goat hair, this chochmah, this chochmah yisera, that they spun the goat's hair whilst it was still attached to the animal. Why did they do that? So we've now got three reasons. Number one, the Sephorno that they wanted would create a more pristine quality of material. The Meshe Chochma, that all the women could partake of it, even those lady who was a Nidda could still do it. And lastly, Reb Chaim Shaul Kaufman brings a very interesting piece from the Stipler that it was done Kilachayad so that they could do it on Shabbos. It's a problem of Meleches HaMishkan. It's a lacking of Meleches Machsheves, which needs to be done. The answer is, it's a Chiddush of the Stipler, that it was only considered Meleches Machsheves after when they were Magdashit. Pre they sanctified it for use in the Mishkan. Before that point, there's no problem of Kilachayah, there's no problem of Meleches Machsheves, and only afterwards when they're ready to shear it, that is done, it's got to be done Mishma with Meleches Machsheves, not on Shabbos, etc., etc. Thank you very much for joining. Have a good evening and a very good Shabbos.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.